Hey, fantastic fans. I've just discovered the most unbelievable tennis time machine that you've got to check out. GoldenAgeOfTennis.com is the world's leading retailer of retro tennis gear. They sell relaunch clothing designs from world famous brands like Sergio Tacchini, Fila, and LS that were worn by absolute legends of the sport like Borg and Connors, Becker. You can literally dress like your idols in these cool one-of-a-kind looks that will have everyone on the courts asking where you got them. Visit goldenageoftennis.com to get same-day worldwide shipping plus 10% off at checkout with the promo code FANTASTIC. Bring vintage tennis back to the courts with goldenageoftennis.com.
Please take your seats quickly, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
I mean, they always have a big mouth. They always talk a lot. So it happened before, it's going to happen again.
This week's fan guest is an Atlanta, Georgia native, now living in Ann Arbor, Michigan, that I've known for years while traveling and playing tournaments around the country. He grew up falling in love with tennis, like I did, with neighborhood courts across the street. And he's a fantastic doubles player in his own right. So it makes perfect sense why he's such a big fan of today's guest. He lists her Olympic mixed bronze medal moment in London with fellow legend Mike Bryan as his favorite fan moment. And he's here to listen to all the great stories that got her to number one in the world. It's my buddy, Joe Dembowski. Hey, Joe. Thanks for joining today.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
I'm excited too. Are you Raymond ready for this hour?
I hope so. I've been thinking about it. I've been, you know, prepping for a little bit, so we'll see.
Okay. We ran into each other at the US Open this year. It was so good to see you. It was amazing having fans back, right?
Yeah, it was so cool. I mean, last year was, you know, very different to watch on TV, but really being there in person this year was, I mean, it's one of the best experiences I've had in a long time.
I clapped twice as hard to make up for 2020. That was my fan moment. What was your experience like? What was the best match you watched at the Open this year?
This year, I got pretty close to court to watch Kerber and Fernandez, and that was a really fun match. It was a great comeback. It was really, the crowd was electric on Armstrong. It was so much fun. It was really cool to be like right there in the action.
Oh, I love that. What a run for Leila Fernandez. Well, as you may know, our guest today has five US Open titles. That's insane. So let's bring her out and get into this legendary career. When a player spends 652 weeks of her career in the world's top 10 in doubles, you know right away she's one of the best to have ever played the game. But when a player spends 137 of those weeks as the number one doubles player on the planet, you know you have a future Hall of Famer in your presence. And our guest today just so happens to be a part of the 2022 voting class for the Tennis Hall of Fame. Born in Norristown, Pennsylvania, she'd first get national attention by winning back-to-back NCAA singles titles starting in 1992 for the University of Florida. And she'd quickly transition her big wins to the WTA Tour. She'd win her first of 79 career doubles titles in 1993 in Tokyo with another legend, Chanda Rubin. And she'd astonishingly continue to win at least one title for the next 20 years on tour. In addition to those 79 titles, she'd add a remarkable 11 Grand Slam titles to her trophy room. And on June 12th, 2000, she'd become lucky number 13 on the list of players in the Open era to become the number one ranked doubles player in the world. Doubles may have been where she'd win her Grand Slams, but she'd also climbed to number 15 in the world in singles, winning four titles of her own and reaching the fourth round of each major, including two career quarterfinal appearances. We can't forget to mention singles wins over legends like Venus Williams, Martina Hingis, Jennifer Capriati, and Monica Seles. She has an Olympic bronze medal from London, four WTA Tour Championship titles, and record after record from her years on the doubles court. Today, we catch up with a champion that has continued to stay involved in the sport she loves and has rightfully been nominated to the class of 2022 inductees for the International Tennis Hall of Fame. Our guest today is the fantastic Lisa Raymond. Lisa, welcome to Fantastic Tennis.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for having me. I mean, listening to that is just, wow. I mean, yeah, that's just, I need to hire you as my PR man. Absolutely.
I wrote it and it kept going. It was the longest intro because you've done so damn much, Lisa Raymond.
Well, I played for a very long time too. you know, I was blessed and fortunate enough to be able to stay out there for, I mean, almost, you know, 23 years of my life playing professional tennis, which, you know, I loved every moment of it, but happy to be here and stoked to do this podcast. And Joe, so psyched that you're here to join us. Happy to meet you too.
Thank you so much. Can't wait to hear more
this
about
is awesome.
Everything.
Lisa, mm-hmm. I grew up in Tampa, Florida, which mm-hmm. Gainesville was very close. University of Florida, that was kind of a driving distance to us.
Right.
Not very far away. Where I grew up, you were either a Gator fan or a Semple fan.
Yeah.
And those were the only acceptable options. And luckily, I looked good in blue. So I went Gator route. That was how I chose.
Good choice.
Yeah, thanks. I've always been a huge fan of yours. Jill Krabus, you know, you have had mm-hmm. so many great players, Nicole Arndt and Sean Stafford.
Oh, yeah.
And today you have someone like Danielle Collins, who is so close to the top 20. Mm-hmm. So the college formula definitely works. Did you have a soft spot for players like Danielle? You know, people that have mm-hmm. had similar experiences playing NCAA?
Absolutely. You know, I think that, you know, the route that I took growing up was definitely not your quote normal route. I wasn't on the court 6 hours a day. And, you know, my parents didn't send me off to a tennis academy. And, you know, I kind of had a normal life. I went to my proms. I went in my spring break growing up. I had friends outside of tennis, which, you know, and I surrounded myself with such a great support staff, which enabled me to play, I think, the longevity of my career. But, you know, one of the biggest things was they let me kind of decide, listen, if you don't feel like you're ready to play pro tennis, go to college. And, you know, I loved it, you know. Going to the University of Florida, having Andy Brandy as my coach for those 2 years, and he continued to be my coach once I left school, was probably the best decision I ever made, to be honest, both on and off the court. So to be able to see people, you know, like Danielle, you know, different players, you know, both in the women's and men's game do so well now, it's just awesome. It's awesome to see that, you know, you can go to school, you can play in college, you can, you know, have a bit of a normal life, you know, and not just turn pro at 15, 16, 17 years old anymore and do well. It's not like before, a lot of times you would think you're missing out, you know, like if I go to school for a year or two and not be playing and competing on the tour, am I going to miss out? You know, yeah. Is that going to hurt me being able to break through? And I think there's players now, you know, like the Danielle Collins of the world that are showing you that you can do it. You can have it all, yeah. You know?
Oh, I can't wait to talk about it. We're going to talk about your experience in UF in a little bit. I know you're just coming back from the court from a practice session with the WTA player, Allie Kick, who you've been working with. We call that a super coach, by the way. I know that's, you just need to make sure you understand that term.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I don't know if I deserve that title, but thank you.
I know you're heading off to a tournament soon. So I want to jump right into today's show.
Okay.
I'd like to start the pod with my favorite way to start any service game.
15 love.
And that's 15 love. It's a super simple game. I'm going to throw 15 questions at you, Lisa, and you just respond as quick and accurate as your forehand was during your 2004 Australian Open upset of Venus Williams.
Oh, I love it. God, that's a great memory. Thank you for that one.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Question one, name the first professional match you remember watching live or on television.
Wow. Oh, it had to be probably a Wimbledon final with my parents when I was a kid, waking up early, breakfast at Wimbledon. I think it was a men's final, probably like a McEnroe and somebody. So Wimbledon for sure.
Definitely. Okay. Well, that makes sense. We're going to talk about your Wimbledon exploits in a bit as well.
The Holy Grail.
The Holy Grail. Number two, you may have won your Grand Slams and doubles, but you had a stellar singles career playing 14 former number ones and beating legends like Hingis and Seles and Capriati. But I wondered which player that wasn't a former number one, do you remember giving you nightmares during your career?
Oh, that's the easiest question ever. Natalie Tauzier. Literally, I think I lost to her. I was like 0-14 against Nat. And I actually got her the last time we played each other. Granted, it was the end of her career. But the last time we played each other, it was in Birmingham. And it was actually the year I actually won Birmingham in the singles. And I beat her in the semis. And it was like 7-5 in the third. But I finally got her. I finally got her. But it was I'd see her in the draw and I'd be like, no, not Nat again.
Her best surface too. She's great on grass.
She was phenomenal, but I will say it was definitely in the latter part of her career.
Some others too. Patty Schnitter, that was a tough one for you.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that one up. I appreciate that one too.
I wanted to start early.
And again, if there was the two players, it was Nat and Patty. And Patty just drove me nuts with the lefty to my backhand. The lefty, the heavy forehand to my one-hander, I couldn't figure it out. I could not figure it out.
So cool. We're reminiscing today. All these WTA fans out there, we're hearing Toziad and, yes. and we're like, yes, I remember. Was there a top player you'd like to play though? Was there someone you just mentioned, you saw Nat in the draw and you're like, okay, yeah. that's going to be a tough one. But was there one that you're like, okay, my game matches up against her. I'm okay. I'm cool.
It probably depended upon the surface. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like, again, it was like two players that I absolutely despise playing were Conchita Martinez and Arantxa. Obviously they both just drove me nuts on any other surface on a clay court. I mean, they would just kill me, but I got them both again on grass. And so it was like, if I played them on a quicker surface, if I played Conchi indoors, if I played her on grass, obviously she's a Wimbledon champ, but I just felt like, okay, I've got a chance here, you know, because I yeah. can chip and charge, I can come forward. But yeah, I mean, and then there were players that, you know, like the Lindsays of the world that I just hate.
Well, couldn't even, yeah, we'll talk about Lindsay till later. Yeah. Lindsay's a different league.
LB's a good friend of mine. She's a great friend. So, but yeah, that was never a fun match for me.
Oh man, let's go to number three. Lisa, on June 12th, 2000, you become the 13th player on the WTA Tour to become the number one player in the world. And you'd stay there for a remarkable 137 weeks during your career. What was that moment like for you that first time you saw your name atop the WTA rankings?
You know, again, it's one of those things you always dream of. You know, I think for me, you know, and I know this is kind of like a cliche thing to say, but a lot of it depended upon the partners you picked. And I was very, very fortunate throughout my career that I picked some amazing partners and, you know, we just worked well together. And for me, it was just to be able to work in a partnership and to be number one and to really more so being number one in the world as a, you know, the individual, but being the number one team meant more in the sense that because it was, you know, we worked, it was both of us out there, you know, working together. It still was one of those things where you're just like, wait, am I really like the best in the world at this? Like, this yeah. is crazy, you know? And it's just, you know, every time you're out there and you're grinding on the court, you're in the gym and you're battling and, you know, you're making the sacrifices, being away from home and your family and just working your butt off to achieve your dreams. I really don't think all of that, like even like listening to you, like with the introduction this just now, it's like, you don't even think about it when you're in it. You don't, you know, until you really put your rackets down and step away and yeah. kind of have time to reflect upon your career and upon, you know, maybe some of these things that, you know, wow, like I did pretty well.
You did. Yeah. You mentioned you were co-number one, actually, with mm-hmm. not only Sam Stosur and Renee Stubbs, but yep. also Lisa Hooper.
Yep.
So you did get to share that moment, too. And I'm mm-hmm. sure there's a feeling of invincibility when you're the number one team in the world. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's all amazing when you're number one, but when one is number one and the other is not, does it get complicated?
It's strange. There's no question. I mean, it's one thing, obviously, if I'm not playing with the same consistent partner every week, but if you start playing with the same partner, and there were actually times when, you know, say it was Aliza or Sam or even Renee, and, you know, you'd have the conversation, well, look, I'm going to take a week off, or maybe one of them was injured. You know, I know that there was a time when Renee was injured. So I was out for a few months and I ended up playing, you know, events with like Mary Jo and Lindsay. And so my ranking would get higher than her. Yeah. And which, you know, it's, you feel bad in the sense because you are a team, you know, I mean, again, that's it. It's, you're a doubles team. You're not really necessarily a doubles player. You're a doubles team. So, you know, but later on in my career, when I was just playing with somebody and there wasn't an injury or whatever, I mean, we always played the same weeks, you know, just yeah. because it just was the right thing to do. You know, it was like,
you learned from time too, right? You had to kind of, yeah, you know,
absolutely. No doubt.
It was like a lot easier. Else.
Yeah. So,
well, man, well, let's go to number four. Number four, this one's actually for you, Joe. I live for a tennis fan moment. So this question is especially for you. I love that you're a big fan of Lisa's. Get in line, Joe. But I'd like to know, what was it about her and her game that made you such a big fan of her career?
Something that I really look for in players when I like really find something I like about them is their net game and their ability yes. to handle really hard shots and make it look very easy. Because for as much doubles as I play, I don't have a great net game. And so I'm very jealous of that. And I just, even going back to when you won the bronze with Mike, you know, mm-hmm. there are, you know, playing in mix too, you know, the guy's going to hit really hard at you and they're going to pick on you sometimes. And you know, you were able to take it. And then with Sikki, hits harder than some guys too, you know? And so you handled her too. And so, I mean, just coming through that match with great confidence to be up there and to be against somebody hitting the ball as hard as they do. I mean, I love that. And that's just was something I just loved.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I really do. And you know, it's funny. People talk about some of my greatest moments on a tennis court. I mean, that night, that match was everything for me for so many reasons, but you know, and you're right. I mean, Lisicki, I mean, she was a great doubles player. Obviously she did phenomenal, had a phenomenal singles career, but you know, she could, with those returns, I mean, she had a massive serve, huge returns.
Yep. And just so you know, we had Sabine Lisicki on the show and she told me that she couldn't decide which match was more devastating, her Wimbledon final loss or that loss to you and Mike at the Olympics. So that was right up there with the Wimbledon final, just FYI.
Yeah.
Her losing that bronze medal was, you know, was a big deal. But I know you played the Olympics with Martina in 2004. So this was a great redemption moment for you. I'd love to talk about what your Olympic experience was like.
I mean, again, like I said, it was winning that bronze medal is, if not the most special, probably top two or three most special moments of my career. I have a long history with the Olympics in the sense that in 2000, I was number one doubles player in the world and was not selected for the Olympic team, which was beyond devastating, and ended up, you know, having a bit of a lawsuit that I ended up suing, you know, and lost. You know, I just felt like I should have been on that team, but then to be able to be selected in 2004 with Martina was amazing. You know, we did not do very well. And then was just like, okay, there's just one thing that I feel like I have not accomplished in my doubles career. And that was a medal in the Olympics. So I worked my butt off, got in the best shape of my life, you know, partnered up with Liesl Huber in 2011. And, you know, we became number one in the world and we're winning all the tournaments and got selected to the team. And it's like, okay, this is it, Lise. This is your final chance here. So, and then Mike and I, we hooked up before Wimbledon and said, look, we win Wimbledon, they got to take us, right? We got to be selected to be, I mean, obviously he's gone, you know, for the men. So we go out, we win Wimbledon. And so we're on the Olympic team. Yeah, it was awesome. And so Liesl and I go out and we play, we lose in the semis. All right. And Mike and I lose in the semis. Okay. After being up a set and a break, but that's okay. But anyway, So then the next day, okay, so I'm playing for both my medals now. This is it. Like, I know I'm never getting a chance because I'm older, you know, and this was going to be it. Liesl and I go out and we lose in three sets. So we lose that match and I get off the court. I'm devastated. Okay. And I've got to go out 45 minutes later. I've got to go out with Mike and play for the bronze. Okay. Against Kass and Lisicki. And I'm thinking to myself, Lisa, you got to get your shit together. You know, like, come on. You know, like, you don't have time here to be upset. Like, this is it. So, and Mike was amazing. You know, Mike's like, look, come on, like, this is it. At least I got you, you know? And I'm like, I know you do. And so we go out. I literally, like I said, I had 45 minutes to like get myself together, get something quick to eat, get back out there. And it's pouring. Okay. Close the roof. All right. So we're playing inside Wimbledon center court. It's packed and it's just like the most insane atmosphere. Right. And we go out there and it was a battle. I mean, we, again, set in a break, lose it, get into the third set. And it's just whoever's going to hold serve. And it's just back and forth, back and forth. And it was just phenomenal tennis. I mean, phenomenal match. Like I said, I mean, the rain's coming down. I mean, it's just, it's unreal atmosphere. And then Mike and I, we end up getting through that match. And when I tell you, when we win, I mean, I jump, literally, there's a picture of me jumping in his arms and he just like grabs me and picks me up. And it's just, it was probably, again, it was just one of the greatest moments of my life and certainly of my career, and just phenomenal, phenomenal night and day. But it was, the whole point of that is just saying, like, within like that, like, hour span, I mean, I was so upset and so down. And then it was like, okay, like, I don't have time to, like, you know, be crying here. Like, I have one more chance to win a medal. Yeah. And thanks to Mike and we did it. We did it. Mike,
you did it.
So,
you did it. I mean, it was me. You have such history with him too. Three grand slams of your 11. I mean, such a important partnership for you and your career too.
Absolutely.
Why were you guys so great together? Obviously, you know, two of the greatest doubles players of all time, but sometimes it doesn't work. We've seen it, you know.
Absolutely.
What is it about Brian Raymond that was so great on the court?
Well, the funny thing is I tried, Bob and I were not very good together. Like, we played and we just, it didn't work, you know, and Mike and I, we just, our games, it was just him. He, you know, being on the ad side, and I mean, his return was just funny. I mean, just unreal. And
Legend.
I mean, beyond, you know, one of the two greatest of all time. We just meshed. We got on great off the court too. I mean, we were just like, we had fun, but yet we just were so like, we're both so competitive and neither one of us wanted to lose. And we just matched up great. And it just worked with Mike. You know, Bobby and I just didn't work. Mike and I worked, you know, and thank God.
And, I love it.
Yeah, oh. The partnership. So.
Let's continue the legend trend because number six is about another legend. So I know today we're going to be talking about your biggest wins and statistics that you have.
Okay.
But this one, Lisa, this one may be my favorite.
Oh boy.
So I have to mention it. Did you know, Joe, maybe you don't even know this, but did you know that Lisa is undefeated against Novak Djokovic? You beat him on your way to the Hotman Cup title.
Hotman Cup. Yes.
With Taylor Dent back in 2006 when you won the title. That's a great stat. I mean, come on.
I honestly completely forgot that. That is
unreal. You're welcome. You're welcome for that today.
Thank you, John.
You beat Novak and Ana Ivanovic. So who also, you know.
Here's the thing I remember on Hotman Cup. Taylor Dent basically put me on his back and won that title for us. He played unreal singles. Okay, I got my butt handed to me in all my singles.
Okay, that's true.
And then the mixed, we were great. We played great together. But I mean, he was just, thank God, Taylor played awesome that week to be a Hotman Cup champ.
That's but a he great wasn't stat, Novak though. Back then, right? He wasn't no. I mean, he was Novak.
Well,
but he
you
wasn't
know what's funny Novak. Now? No, I want to say I want to say he was a replacement. Honestly, I feel like there was somebody. He was like a last minute player that they've seriously, I mean, that's how long ago it was. And he was just starting to play. Like he was just coming out.
Oh, that's so funny.
And starting to do well. That's hilarious. God, great.
I hope
stat.
He doesn't hear that. That's funny. RIP Hotman Cup, RIP. Maybe it's coming back. That's the rumor. Who knows? We'll see. Okay.
Right.
All right. Number eight, we're going to stick with doubles, Lisa. Okay. Name someone that you never got the chance to play doubles with or mix with during your career, but you wish you had.
Hingis, Martina. We were supposed to play once and I was so excited. I was like, oh, I finally get to play with Martina. It's going to be awesome. And she calls me the night before and she was injured. She had to pull out of the tournament, you know, but look, credit to her. At least she actually picked up the phone. She didn't have an agent do it. She didn't have her mom do it. You know, she called me and just said, look, I'm so sorry. She's like, and she did it. She had to pull out of the whole event. And I was like devastated. I was like, oh my God, my chance to play with Martina.
Where was it?
It was remember
Stuttgart.
Where it was?
Stuttgart. Okay. All right.
Stuttgart.
That would have been number 80. Come on, Martina.
I know. Thanks, Martina. You really blew it for me.
Come on, Martina.
I know. But yes, that was the one. She is hands down. And obviously on the men's side, I mean, who doesn't want to play with Roger? I mean, come on.
That would have been pretty cool too, right?
Yeah.
He didn't play mixed enough. He won too much, right? He just didn't play a lot of it.
I mean, that just would have been insane.
Oh, all right, good to know. All right, number eight. Lisa, you've stayed fully entrenched in the game. And just like Maresmo and Lindsay and Stubbsy and Conchi and Bartoli, you're what we call a WTA super coach. And you've been working with WTA pro Ally Kick for the past couple of seasons. Mm-hmm. So your question comes from a big fan of yours in Bakersfield, California. Her name's Danielle Anders. Hello, Danielle.
Hi, Danielle.
She asks, how has the WTA tour changed the most from your early years on tour to your time now on tour with Ally?
That's a great question. You know, for me, I think, and you know, I think a lot of people say this, but the tour, the players have become so physical. Obviously technology has changed so much, you know, the rackets, the strings, it's become such more of a physical sport, which, you know, has its pros and cons. You know, for me, you know, like coaching Ally, I mean, Ally, the one thing that we've been working on, continue to work on is for her to have a bigger shot. And it's like, I mean, she can stay out there all day. She is hands down. And, you know, it's crazy to even say this, but I mean, she's the best athlete on the tour. I mean, she's a joke. I mean, and I thought I was a great athlete. And I thought, I mean, she's a kid that, you know, you put her on a soccer field, you put her a basketball in her hand, you put a baseball bat in her hand, you name it. And she's phenomenal. But what I try and do is I want her to use that athleticism as more of an aggressive mindset rather than, okay, you know what? I don't care that you can stay out there all day and retrieve balls and you're going to make more balls than your opponent. You know, now you have to have a bigger shot. You know, you have to step inside the court. You know, you have to take time away from your opponents. Having said all of that, you know, I think that one of the things that's tough to see sometimes is that there is so much power And the girls can a lot of times be so one-dimensional that that's very frustrating to watch. You know, that's why I love watching Ash Barty, you know, or these girls who have the one-hander. You know, I mean, Allie, had been, again, she's got a great one-handed backhand. She needs to use it more. You need to use that. And it's not just a defensive shot. You need to use the one-hander slice as an aggressive shot, as a changeup, as a short ball, to come forward, whatever it is. I wish some of the women now in the game, I wish they had a little bit more of the Hingis mentality of, you know, okay, let's construct points a little bit better here rather than just, let's hit harder. You're going to hit hard. I'm going to hit harder back. But I think the biggest difference is the physicality of it. But, you know, I also think too, and this is kind of something I've been saying for a while, that I think some of these women, you know, on tour, I feel like there isn't somebody dominating anymore. Like, we don't have a dominant player or a dominant top five or a dominant top 10, because it's like, I think some of them are okay with losing, which we weren't back in my day, you know, and even not even that long ago.
Do you think it's the money, Lisa? Do you think it's too much play? Do you think
100%? There's no question. It's such a business, and it's, look, I mean, that's life. I mean, that's the evolution of the sport. But you look back in the days of Lindsay, the Williams, Monica, you know, all the Steffi, I mean, they didn't lose. And it's not about depth. Okay. I know that the depth now is incredible and that's awesome. And I get that. It wasn't that we lacked the depth. I just feel like, you know, you played those top 10, 15 years ago. And it was like, they weren't losing. They weren't going to go out and lose first round at Indian Wells. They weren't going to go out and lose first round in Miami or whatever. I just felt like it meant more. That to me is tough to watch. I got to be honest.
Yeah. Fascinating. I mean, that is the topic. You know, Flavia Panetta came out this week and said it almost exactly what you're saying too. You know, there's that generation of players who feel like, you know, hey, you got to two quarters and today you would have had two slams by now. Who knows?
Well, that's very generous and nice of you to say.
The depth is so great now, and anyone, you know, can win those. Yeah. You know, you can be 60 in the world. You can look at Raducanu.
Oh, 100%.
No, it's great. I mean, the depth is there.
There's no question. And I'm not saying that there isn't. I'm not saying that these players aren't phenomenal players. I'm just saying that, like, I just wish sometimes their hearts were a little more in it and bigger, you know, and they weren't okay with taking four or five first round, second round losses during the year that players that, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, I'm still, you know, I'm making 20 grand this week and I don't care. And I'm just going to go and chill for the next 4 days and then go to the next tournament. It's like, what?
It's a hot topic for sure. You know, I think it's so interesting. I think we're going to hear more about this too, you know, as we continue to get pop-up stars that just, you know, every week it's a new person that emerges, and it's great for the, you know, for the star quality, but you know, a lot of people crave that consistency of.
Absolutely. There's no doubt. And it's just like, I feel like as soon as somebody truly, truly does step up and just goes, I want it and I'm going to take it and I'm going to take it. Then when that person decides that, then they will start dominating. But until then, until someone actually gets up there and says, you know what, I want to dominate women's tennis and I have the ability to do it and I'm willing to do it week in, week out, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Let's see. All right. Let's go on to question 10 and 11. They're kind of the same for you, Lisa.
Okay.
You get one singles loss and one doubles loss from your career to turn into a win instead.
Oh,
which
easy.
Do you pick, Lisa? Oh, wait. So wait, don't tell me first, because I have like five. That I thought I was hoping to match. And I was like, oh, wait, there's so many.
Okay.
But if you say it's easy, then maybe it's maybe not as easy for me. I don't know.
Well, the singles for me is easy.
Go ahead. And I'll tell you the five that I have. You go. You please tell me.
Okay. Singles, Alexander Stevenson, Wimbledon, round of 16.
And I'm not joking. If we could talk about Wimbledon 99 for a solid hour, I would like to have a separate conversation. It's literally my favorite 90s Grand Slam of all time. It was insane. It was through the roof. Oh. It was bonkers. Everything.
Bonkers.
It was bonkers. We are going to talk about it in a bit. So I want to hold off on that one.
Okay.
I did also put, you have that 2004 Memphis final against Vonnareva.
Oh, backhand down the line.
Three match points, I think. Yeah, sorry. I feel like this is all about hyping you up. So I feel bad about these. Maybe I was too...
Backhand down the line. Poor Allie. I mean, I've had to, like, every time, like, she doesn't cover a passing shot, you know, I'll be like, oh, Svonareva, there it is.
I thought maybe you'd go 2006 Wimbledon against Venus match point as well. That was another big one.
Yes. No, yes.
Maybe not. But no. All right.
Yes. Yes.
But it would go to the third round. So I was really thinking what I would have said was that Australian Open, your quarterfinal, because the 2004 match against Patty.
But exactly. That's all you have to say.
Okay, fine.
It was against Patty.
All right, then done. This was easy.
I didn't have a chance.
How about doubles? What's the one match you wish you could redo?
Okay. Australian Open final. Sam and I playing against Yan and Zhang.
Yeah.
We had two match points to win it. And both, one I should have crossed on. Sam hits a great return. Well, I mean, not a great return, but she gets it down at their feet. Zhang has a backhand volley and she goes cross court all the time and I didn't go. And I should have gone. And then Sam, I mean, she hit a good volley. And then Sam, I think it went like one or two more balls and we lost that one. And then I should have crossed on another.
Oh no, you're feeling so guilty. Joe, do you feel this guilt that she has? Like she's still wearing it all these
Oh, I absolutely.
I need to go have some wine with you. We'll work this out.
Bottles. Yes.
I would have picked 2002 French Open with Renee because you would have had the career slam. You would have had all four majors. I think that was a tough one, but it was Ronald Pasquale and Suarez. And they were great on clay too. That's a
Let me tell you, they never got enough credit. I mean, they were so phenomenal. I mean, they basically started the whole baseline stay back doubles and they were maestros at it. I mean, amazing. I mean, they were a joke, incredible team.
Insane probably to play against.
I mean, I think Ronda Pasquale has something like 5 or 6 French Open titles. I mean, it's ridiculous. And like 3 or 4 in a row. I mean, she's unreal. They were unreal.
Wow. Let's go to number 12.
Okay.
So you're one of the best doubles players in the history of the sport. So can I ask, in your opinion, who would you say was one of the best doubles players of all time that never got to number one in doubles? So someone maybe you played with or played against that really you felt like you just said didn't get enough credit. Ronald Pasquale got to number one. Was there anybody else that maybe?
That's a good question. Who never got.
We'll ruminate.
Yeah. I mean, most of the players I played with or that I played against that I just had utmost respect for ended up probably getting to number one.
Yeah.
You know, like somebody like, I don't even, did Mary Jo Fernandez, I don't think she got to number one in doubles.
No, she didn't get to number one. There we go. That's a good one.
Okay. There's a good one.
You had a French Open final with her.
Yeah. I mean, and she won with Lindsay. I mean, she was, I mean, obviously phenomenal. I mean, singles player, but she was a great doubles player. I mean, you know, and she served volleyed. People didn't give her enough credit. You know, everyone thought MJ was this baseliner and, you know, never came forward, but MJ loved to come forward, you know? So maybe her.
The strongest scrunchie game in the game.
Oh, ever.
I miss her scrunchie. I mean, ever. Come on, ever. Of all, I can't
the
think.
French braid.
Someone send me a photo of someone that had a better scrunchie than
Mario
Fernandez. And I.
That's awesome.
I will retract what I say.
Love her. Yeah, but she's, yeah, that's a good one. That would be my pick. Now I think about it. Yep. MJ.
All right. Number 13, as a former number one with one of the best volleys in the game and in history.
Thank you.
What is one piece of free coaching advice mm-hmm. you can give to players listening out there trying to perfect their volleys? Joe is listening right now.
And I'm like, I'm right here.
Yeah.
One thing I do with players at all levels. I mean, I've done it with Ali. I've done it with when I teach other player clinics. When you are volleying, what you want to think about is that you want to think about like you're catching the ball in front of you. Okay. First of all, your volley always has to be out in front. Always. Okay. But think about when that volley is coming towards you, think about you're going out to catch it. Like you're never going to catch it you're never going to catch a ball close to you, if that makes any sense. Okay. You're always going to catch a ball out in front. So again, you always want to be volleying and have your hands out in front of you. All right. But always think about the volley's coming to your forehand. Okay. I'm going to go catch it. Volley's coming to my backhand volley. I'm going to go catch it with my right hand or left hand, whatever you are. But always think about catching the ball. So it's always going to be in front. Like I demonstrate a lot, like if I'll throw a ball at somebody and you're never going to just catch the ball like on top of you. You know,
it.
It's never going to be like inside of you, like reach out and catch it in front of you. So think about that.
You hear that, Joe? Are you listening to that? We got this.
I'm going to write it down.
My volley was described one time as ratchet, which is not a good thing. I don't know if you guys, that was pretty bad.
Wow. That's yes. I'm sorry.
Have you ever seen that YouTube video of Cara Black like, hitting volleys against the wall?
Oh, of course I have. I mean, Cara is a good friend of mine. Of course. It's insane.
My volley is the opposite of that volley. That's my volley.
All right. That's so tough to imagine, but okay.
Number 14, Lisa, I've heard you self-describe yourself as a perfectionist and you were well known for your competitive spirit and fight on the court. So I wondered, what was one match from your career where you remember getting the most absolute upset on the court? Did you ever just lose your shit, Lisa Raymond?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. So I actually have a good one for you. So I was playing, so I'm from Philadelphia or outside of Philly. I just say Philly, but outside of Philly. And we used to have the tournament there. So of course it was always a big deal. I mean, all my friends and my family and everyone would come and I always play at night. It was awesome. I loved it. So the one year that I was close to making the year-end championships in singles. Okay. This is when we did, they had top 16. Okay. And it was between me and, do you remember Sabine Appelmans?
Oh, of course. I mean, there's not a name you're going to mention that would go past me.
Okay.
Yes.
So Sabine and I were both fighting for the 16th spot. Okay. So I go out there and it comes down. The championships were in New York that year at Madison Square Garden. So I was like, oh my God, come on. So we're playing. I win my first round. She wins her, this is in Philly. We both win our first rounds. Okay. I have to go out. She ends up winning her second round. Okay. So she's one round ahead of me now. I go out and I have to play Anke Huber at night. All right. Now Anke is like the number two or three seed at the time, but I had beaten Anke before. Like I had a decent record against her. If I win, because back then we had bonus points in the rankings. Okay. So if I win, I'm going to have enough points to get ahead of her. Okay. And then I feel like, actually, you know what? Sabine lost. My bad. Sabine lost. So if I win, I'm ahead of her. I'm in the championships. Okay. So I go out, I'm playing the match. I'm up a set and 2-1 with a break. Okay. And I'm playing unreal tennis. Okay. Playing unreal. And so I'm like keeping my shit together. I'm keeping my cool. Okay. Lisa, come on. You know, you just got to, you know, hold your serve, hold yourself, put it up. I end up getting broken. All right. And I lose it. I start banging the racket and I'm like, you know, this and that. And I'm like, I can't believe I blew this opportunity. I lose the set. I get down 5-love like that. Okay. In like 10 minutes. I mean, it was horrible. Right. And here I am, like I'm at home in front of all my family and friends. And I'm like, you suck, you know, like doing the whole like, woe is me, you know, martyr. All of a sudden it's 5-1, 5-2, 5-3, 5-4, 5-all. I get back to 5-all. Okay. And I'm like, oh my God. Okay, I have a chance again. Oh my God, I can make championships, you know, and I'm freaking out, you know, whatever, right? Cut to, I end up losing 7-6 in the third, okay? I walk off the court, I'm devastated, obviously. I'm like, oh my God, that's it. My chances for championships are over, blah, blah. And I come off the court. And as I'm walking off the court in Philadelphia, so you walk to get to the locker room, there was like all these tables set up and that's where transportation was. So you walk around the corner and leave the court, you walk into the locker room, there's all these tables and there was all these phones, like literally like all these phones just like hooked up like for transportation and for WTA and da, da, da. So I turn the corner, I literally take my arm, I put it on a table. And I literally take every single phone and I've just sweep the entire table and the phones go flying. I mean, it's like one of those movie scenes, like where somebody like,
oh,
where you see the
gosh.
Desk and someone's all pissed off and mad or whatever. And they take the desk and they take everything and they throw it. That's exactly what I did.
Badass Lisa Raymond.
That
Raymond.
Was a bad night. Yeah. So
don't mess with that.
That was the worst.
That's a good one. I'm so glad I got to know that. All right. Here we go.
There you go.
Under our last question today in this round. Let's talk about great things because you've been nominated to the class of 2022 for the Tennis Hall of Fame, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. What would it mean to you when you get that call and find out your name will be enshrined in Newport?
Oh, just to even be in the conversation is just so humbling. Mm. And, you know, it was, I'll be honest. I mean, I was nominated last year. This is my second year. And again, just blown away by the nomination. And I'll never forget. I mean, it was, you know, I think it was almost like, okay, well, it's so crazy, like to even think that I would even be in the Hall of Fame, like in with all these names and these just, you know, icons of our sport. And when I did get the call that I didn't make it, I was absolutely devastated. Mm. And I almost didn't realize how much I had actually like, obviously I knew how much it was going to mean to me, but it was like, I almost didn't realize how much energy I had put into thinking, oh my God, like, I can't believe I might be in the same name mentioned as these incredible, incredible players before me, you know, and again, just, it's just blows me away to even be in the conversation. And even, you know, this year's candidates are just unreal, yeah. You know, every year. They're just incredible. And it would just mean everything again, you know, to be able to say that you're a Hall of Famer. I mean, wow, that's just unreal.
Gonna happen. Our fingers are crossed.
Well, thank you, John.
We're gonna find out now how you got there. Let's get into our game today. Are we ready for a game, guys?
Ready.
Oh boy. Okay.
Play a game called I 40 Love You. It's going to be Joe versus Lisa in a fan versus favorite tennis match trivia showdown all about Lisa's career in life.
God.
Joe, I'm going to ask you two questions about Lisa's career. And then Lisa, I'm going to ask you two questions that test your own Ray memory from your own amazing career.
Okay.
If we happen to end up in a 2-2 tie, I've hidden a tiebreak question later in the game for you, Lisa.
Oh my God.
Or maybe I'll just make you hum the University of Florida fight song. Maybe I will just do that.
Don't do that.
All right, I'll skip that one. All right, fine. But I'm sure you remember it, right? Yeah? Okay.
Yeah.
All right, let's go on to question one. Lisa, you're going to start us off today.
Okay.
Here we go. We're going way back to your junior days.
Oh, boy.
All the way back to 1990. And this is going to test your Ray memory for sure. All right, here we go.
Oh, I like that. Ray memory. Mm-hmm.
Lisa Raymond, here's your first question. You were a fantastic junior with a stellar career. But the first time you'd play this player at Junior Wimbledon, you may not have gotten the win, but you'd make up for it as you then beat her on the way to your first WTA singles final in 1994 against Lindsay Davenport. Which player did you play 11 times as a pro and beat at the European Open in 1994?
Maggie Maleva.
Yeah, there we go. On the board.
Too good.
Yes. I'm on the board. And the only reason I actually really know that is because I was horrible internationally. Like, I could not play in any junior anything, right? And I always say, like, I cannot believe I had to play Maggie Maleva at Junior Wimbledon. I mean, she becomes, like, you know, one of the greatest. And I had to play Maggie, yeah, like, first round of Junior Wimbledon.
You had a good history against her. 11 times. That's a lot. It's a lot to play somebody.
Yes, I know. It is a lot. It's a lot.
Mentioned your junior days. I'd love to start at the beginning today. And I'd love to hear how you first fell in love with tennis.
My family, my parents, I was such a tomboy growing up. I mean, I loved all sports. I mean, I was always playing. I was out in the backyard throwing the football with my dad, or, you know, playing soccer or basketball, whatever it was. Whatever it was, I wanted to be outside doing it. And with friends and whatnot. And my parents played. I mean, my parents would go and I'd go out there and hit with them. And it was just one of those things, like, I just really, really enjoyed it. You know, I always had like all this crazy energy as a kid. I mean, even to this day, I'll be like texting you at like 6 a.m. be like, oh, I'm up, you know? And it's like,
I love it. You and I are similar.
Exactly.
Like 5 a.m.
Exactly.
Twins.
So it's like, you know, it's like, I'm constantly moving and it's tough to slow me down. And that's how I was as a kid. And I loved the sport, you know, and I think I figured out at an early age that, you know, it was something I was decent at, I was good at. And I started having these aspirations and these dreams of holding trophies and hoisting Wimbledon cups and trophies and plates. And, you know, you fall in love with the dream. And I loved it. I loved my tennis friends as a kid. I loved going to college and playing on the team. And I loved competing, be able to have a career doing what I did. I mean, it's incredible to, you know, be able to say I was able to do that.
You were such a great junior. You'd even play qualifying in 1989 and make it to the main draw in your very first tour event at the US Open. And it didn't take long for you thereafter to become the number one ranked American junior in the world in 1990. Do you remember that 1989 US Open, that first round? I mean, you got through qualifying. I mean, I'm guessing there was a ton of nerves that day, probably.
Oh my God.
You were a teenager.
I was absolutely. And I can picture her and I can't remember her name, but what's even funnier is I think that same year in doubles, Erica DeLone and I, who I played juniors with, okay, another dear friend of mine, we won the girls 18s. Mm-hmm. And so we're like, okay, sweet. We get a doubles wild card, you know, blah, blah, blah. We win our first round and we go out and we have to play second round of the Open, Sokova and Novotna. And it's like, oh my God. It's like, are you kidding me? You know, we lost. Oh no.
An introduction to the WTA tour, right?
Oh yeah.
Come on. Two greats.
Oh no. Yeah. We got bageled. Yep. And then, I mean, fortunately, I mean, I would go on to play them numerous times in singles and doubles. And, you know, Yana, God bless her. I mean, she became, you know, a friend and, you know, she was unreal. But like, yeah, I mean, that was just like, yeah, here you go, kids. Goodbye. Like,
yeah. Welcome to the WTA.
Yeah, welcome to the tour. Go back down there to the juniors.
You're not ready.
Yeah.
Well, that's good transition. So honestly, with all the success, it did surprise a lot of people though, early on, mm-hmm, that you decided to play college at the mm-hmm University of Florida under the legendary NCAA coach, Andy Brandy, who you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
That was a time when NCAA tennis was really taboo, like you talked about earlier. I read an article where you pretty much said neither your game nor your mind was ready to, you know, mm-hmm, to play and travel through the rigors of the WTA tour. Was that decision solely up to you?
You know, it's funny. You know, I look back and think, oh, I had these tennis parents, you know, and it's like, oh my God, my parents were amazing compared to tennis parents of today and, you know, after me. But it was just one of those things. I mean, I wasn't ready. I just wasn't ready. And they knew it. I was so fortunate growing up that my coach throughout my entire junior career, Charlie Oliver, he was, you know, retired West Point, like just an unreal man. And he was so adamant about me having a life outside of tennis. You know, he'd tell my parents, she has to have an education. She needs friends. She should not be on a tennis court 5-6 hours a day, at, you know, 12 years old. And so, you know, that was instilled in them and in me. you know, when I was young, I was 17 going into college as a young freshman. So just wasn't ready, you know, and it was to this day, the best decision of my career without question.
You won back-to-back NCAA singles titles. Mm-hmm. You were the first player to win all three collegiate Grand Slams in one season. And in 2003, you were named to the UF Athletic Hall of Fame. You'd win that second title in 1993, and you decide to play tennis full-time on tour. And just a few short months later, in June of 1993, you'd completely tear through the draw in your very first Wimbledon and make the fourth round, losing to Jennifer Capriati, 8-6 in the third.
Heartbreaker.
Oh my gosh.
Court 14. I'll never. Oh my God. Yeah.
This would be the first time of many times where we'd start to hear your name in the tennis headlines. What do you remember besides the court number from that match against Jennifer?
It was, again, court 14. It was packed. I mean, again, it was, and I had known Jen. I mean, I played juniors with Jen. We won the national clay court doubles. I mean, she was like, she must have been like 11, 12, something crazy, you know?
She was 6 years old. She was six. Just FYI. Yeah.
But seriously. But like, you know, so I had known her and then obviously, you know, followed her. And then, you know, and I knew going into the match, like it was a match that with my game, it was a winnable match. And, you know, and Andy was with me there. And it was just one of those matches where it just back and forth. And, you know, again, you walk away losing 8-6 in the third set, you know, to get to the quarterfinals in my first Wimbledon. And the thing that was even funnier about the whole incident was like, it was such a quick transition for me. I was like, wow. I mean, like, you know, a few months ago, I'm playing college tennis and here I am in the fourth round of Wimbledon. And I was like, wow, like, this is just unreal. But yeah, court 14, I'll never forget it.
It was unreal. Yeah. I mean, your game was so beautiful on grass. It really was. I mean, you'd win your second title in Birmingham on grass as well. Your slice backhand was such a weapon on the grass. It really was. Would you say that was your favorite surface?
Without question. You know, it's funny. I always tell, like, you know, I tell Allie now, and I always tell people when they ask me, it just grass simplified everything for me. And, you know, I was one of those players that I could hit all the shots, you know, so it was like, okay, well, which one should I hit now? And that would kind of mess me up sometimes where it's like, okay, well, you know, where it's grass, it's like, okay, I'm going to serve here. I'm going to serve volley and I'm going to volley here. I'm going to chip a charge. And this is what I'm going to do every single point. You know, my slice was just beyond effective and I loved coming forward and I loved being at the net. And so, you know, hence some of my best results obviously were on the grass and I loved it. I mean, Wimbledon was just, again, those 2 weeks were the highlight of my year every year.
Well, I can't move on from 1993 without finishing up this question because it's the very first of what we would come to find 79 career WTA doubles titles. I feel like I'm going to rattle off endless stats today. Just there's so many.
Thank you.
You'd win your first WTA doubles title in Tokyo, Japan with Chanda Rubin that year, who I love. Mm-hmm. You had such a great battle with her at the US Open too, which I loved watching that match. There was a great match. What do you remember from that first WTA title in Tokyo? That must have been very special.
It was very, very special. And again, Chanda and I had known each other, played together, and obviously fellow American, and here we are over in Tokyo playing doubles together. And I think anytime you win your first of anything, you know, you do your first of anything, it's going to be so special. And it's one of those things where it's your dreams, your dream of being, you know, last man standing. And I think that's why I've done so well in doubles. I had such a good and successful doubles career was I loved working with somebody, you know, and I loved being out there with someone. And, God, I mean, I think back now, I mean, Chanda and I, we were kids. I mean, we were so young, you know, we won that. And she would obviously go on top 10 in the world in singles and have a phenomenal career. And, you know, we still talk about that, you know, my God, I can't believe it was that first title was with you, Chan.
Six titles in Tokyo too. Amazing. Amazing. Let's move on to our second of four trivia questions today. And Joe, this is your first question today. We're moving into a very important part of Lisa's career. This is 1994 through the year 2000. So here we go, Joe. I'm going to start you off with multiple choice today. You ready?
Okay.
Lisa would make her first Grand Slam doubles final in 1994 with longtime friend, Lindsay Davenport, as they lose in the finals of the French Open that year to Gigi Fernandez and Natasha Zvereva. As we all know, she'd ultimately win her first doubles Grand Slam title later in 2000 with partner Renee Stubbs, but she did win a few mixed doubles Grand Slams before that 2000 title, with the first being in 1996. Can you remember which Grand Slam Lisa Raymond won first? This is a tough one. You're going to have to, like, you're going deep, like with mixed doubles here. I mean, I'm sorry, but you get four options. So don't pick Tokyo. It wasn't a group.
Yeah, exactly.
I know she had A lot. Was it the US Open? She had a lot of US Opens.
It was. Yes. Well done.
Good job.
With Patrick Galbraith.
Well done. Yeah, with Galbi. Good job.
Lisa, how surreal is winning a Grand Slam for the first time? It's 96. You're still young on the tour. I mean, you barely have been playing full time for just a few years. I mean, what?
Yeah. Well, the craziest part about it was that I was on the backhand side. Like I tell Galbi, I mean, all the time, I'm like, wait, how did that happen? How did I win a Grand Slam in mixed with on the backhand side? But no, I mean, again, to win in New York, my first Grand Slam, I mean, it was just awesome. You know, my family was there. I was so young. You know, I had my whole career ahead of me and I was thinking, my God, like, this is just incredible. Yeah. You know, and Galbi was phenomenal doubles player. Again, former number one, Grand Slam champion, Davis Cup. I mean, he's an awesome guy and he picked me, you know, and I was like very, very fortunate, you know, to be able to play with him that year. And, you know, he's still a friend of mine and we still talk about it. So it was definitely quite the memory.
You forged a very strong friendship, an important partnership early in your career with Lindsay Davenport. Mm-hmm. You get to 2 Grand Slam finals and win 9 career WTA titles with her, including 3 at Indian Wells. Your titles span from 1994 all the way to Memphis 2008, and this would prove to be the first of 4 iconic long-term partnerships that you've had in your career. How did you first meet Lindsay?
I mean, LD and I came out together on the tour. I mean, she was 17, I was 19. Our friendship, you know, we knew each other in juniors a little bit, and then we just, because we were the next big Americans coming out, you know, we just hit it off. And to this day, I mean, she's still one of my dearest friends. And, you know, I have some of the funniest pictures of us playing doubles together, you know, I mean, LD's, you know, what is she like 6'2" or whatever, and I'm 5'3" on a good day. The one thing that stinks looking back at my career is that we didn't win a slam together, you know, because we played so well together. I mean, she had this obviously most unreal ground strokes on the planet, returns, swinging. I mean, her volleys, she'd hit these swinging volleys that were like reflex volleys. I mean, they were unreal. Some of the best hands ever. And I don't think she ever got the credit that she should have for her volleys. And so we matched up so well and we meshed so well and we were such good friends off the court. And yeah, you know, that was definitely the one thing that we both, when we were young, we were both so bad though on the court, we would both get our like negative attitudes. I'll never forget, we played, we were in another final. I think it was finals of the French. We were playing Martina and I think she was playing with Natasha at the time, Zareva. And it was early. It was Aussie. We were playing the finals of Aussie. And it was like literally like the second game of the match. And it was like one love. And Martina comes in, like Lindsay hits this unreal return. Martina comes into volley and just hits like this off, like feathered volley by both of us. And we both look at each other and she looks at me and she goes, she's a maestro. And I'm like, we're done. Like, it was just like literally one love in the first set. And we're both like, we have no chance. But yeah, I mean, LD. And then, you know, LD and I would go on and we coached a little bit when she was coaching Madison. You know, she brought me on to the team for a little while, which was an awesome experience. I loved it. Working with LD is just, she's the best.
Friends are important in your world.
Absolutely.
You know, they really are. You know, traveling and not being home all the time, friends are really important. So I love hearing that. In 1995, Lisa, you'd enter the top 20 in the world for the first time, and you'd continue to finish within the top 30 in the world for the next 10 years on tour. That's another remarkable stat that you have. Also in 1995, you'd play doubles for the first time with longtime partner Renee Stubbs. Mm-hmm. And this next question will actually be your tiebreak for today's game. So lots of pressure here. If you get this right, you win the tiebreak today. If not, it goes to Joe. And you never want to throw away a tiebreak. I mean, you have a lot of...
No, absolutely not. Oh, gosh.
Here's your question. Right. You ready?
I'm ready. Come on.
Do you remember the first team that ever beat you and Renee?
Ever?
Yeah. Where's the first time you played together? The hint is Quebec City. There we go. I'll give you that.
I was going to say Quebec City.
Okay, good. It's for the tiebreak. Who beat you in Quebec City, Lisa Raymond?
Oh my God. If Renee's ever listens to this, she's going to kill me because she's like a nightmare stat person. she remembers everything.
She is.
Oh,
she's
God. John.
Na, 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 na. Go Gators. Na, 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 na.
Wait, hold on. Okay. Nicole Arndt with somebody?
Yeah.
Okay. Wait. Nicole Arndt.
Sorry, Joe. I had to give her.
Did she play? Cat Adams?
No. Oh, no. Actually, now you lost it. Oh, I can't help you, Lisa. I gave you a hint and you blew it. You blew it with that cross. You should have crossed when you should. It was Bolograph.
Oh, Arndt and Bolograph. What an idiot.
They played together for 30 years.
Of course.
Come on, Lisa. All right, we're going to talk about Renee later, but I quickly want to run through Lisa's late 90s legendary list of milestones. Here we go. Okay. In 1996, we talked about winning the US Open with Patrick Galbraith. That was amazing. You'd win your first career singles title that year as well in Quebec City. So lots of career milestones in Quebec City.
Yes.
If you've ever been, it's a lovely place, anyone listening.
It's amazing.
Just don't go in the winter, but it's lovely. You start your 1997 season playing some great tennis. The forehand was hard, the backhand slice was low, and the serve was accurate. You'd make your third Grand Slam doubles final, this time with Mary Jo Fernandez at the French. Mm-hmm. And you'd continue to climb up the rankings, and you'd peak at 15 in the world after a masterful upset of then world number one, Martina Hingis, in her home event in Zurich, Switzerland. We've got to talk about this match, Lisa. This is the height of your singles career. You beat the world number one. It's stuff people dream of in their lives. And you did so wearing a bandana. Quite the look, Lisa.
I did. That was definitely quite the look. Yes, I definitely had the look going. I did.
You were 1-7 against the maestro, Martina Hingis. Close matches for sure. What was it about that day in Zurich that made history for you?
Well, here's the funny part of that story is that the week before, I lost to Martina in the finals of Filderstadt, where we all know, well, those in the tennis world all know that.
I'm driving a car. Everyone knows. They're like, it's the Porsche.
You win Filderstadt, you're driving a Porsche, right? I lose to her, and it was like 4-4 or 4-3, something like that, right? In Filderstadt. So then I go and I beat her the week later. And all I kept thinking to myself was, why couldn't I have beaten her the week before? And won the Porsche. But no, I mean, that was to be able to, you know, obviously, I mean, and Martina, I mean, my gosh, I mean, she was that year, I think she lost 5 matches. And to be able to be one of those 5 matches that she won, I mean, that's exactly what I was talking about before. I mean, you don't see that anymore. She was so dominant and so good. And the court was just, it suited my game so well. And again, it was one of those, it was a night match. It was packed and the atmosphere was incredible. Yeah, I mean, to be able to beat somebody that I looked up to so much, both singles and doubles, and that was just phenomenal. I mean, it was certainly, you know, probably I'd say that and beating Venus in Australia in the latter part of my career are my two biggest singles wins.
For sure. Yeah. No, I love it. What a great win. In 1998 and 1999, you'd have solid singles years. And Lisa, we talked about it. I'd love to talk about that Wimbledon 1999 at one point. Martinez, you beat Arantxa Sanchez Vicario.
Yep.
You know, you won your first round 8-6 in the third. All the stars were aligning. And then you get Alexander Stevenson, where you're the heavy favorite. And it's just, there's so much hype. That tournament,
controversy. It was crazy.
Everything going on in the world during that time. So much things. That tournament was bonkers. Mm-hmm. But in happier times, you played full time with Renee. And by 1999, you both had already won 12 titles together and you were the best team in the world. But all you needed was a Grand Slam to prove it. Mm-hmm. So let's jump to the year 2000 into question 3. Lisa, this is your last question today. You'd start the new millennium on a powerful note as the year 2000 brought not only the number one doubles ranking and your first Grand Slam singles quarterfinal at Wimbledon that year, but you'd also win your first doubles Grand Slam title at the 2000 Australian Open. You'd win the first and last sets of that doubles final 6-4. But can you remember what the second set score was against Martina Hingis and Mary Pierce in that final match? How good is your memory?
Again, of course, you keep asking me these questions with Renee. She's going to kill me.
You got the first one. You like pressure. So are we feeling like it's tight or was it not tight? Was it like an easy second set? Did you lose?
Tight. Oh, okay, it was tight. Definitely
all right.
Tight.
So we've narrowed it down to like a couple.
I want to say, I don't think it wasn't a tie break. Right? No. Oh, it was, wasn't it? Is that why you're smiling?
I'm smiling because you're just so adorable. And I just want you to get this. I feel bad.
No, because I know I'm totally guessing because I know that it was one of those. I know that I remember sitting down on a changeover and thinking we had it. So I'm going to say 7-5.
Oh, it was 7-5.
Oh,
you got it. Okay. I was trying to be dramatic. No, we got it. Okay, good, good. Good job.
Okay.
Can we talk about that match for a moment? I mean, the emotions were high. I talked to Renee about that winning moment so many times. I mean, obviously what it meant to her, what it meant to playing with you for so long and not having that title. And then all of a sudden you get the title and she's in Australia. Everything is just, the world is transformed. So it must have been the best feelings ever. How did that tournament come about for you? What was your memory from that final?
Oh my gosh. I mean, her, again, to win our first title. And I mean, obviously, you know, Renee and I were so close and you know, on and off the court and doing as well as we had and not having that getting that monkey off our back, I guess you could say, you know, as far as being so good, but yet you don't have a Grand Slam title. So you really, you know, you're not that good. But, you know, I'll never forget, you know, our whole family came. They drove like all night, you know, to get there and be there for the final. They drove from Sydney. And it just, it was one of those things where just the stars were aligned. And again, it was, you know, center court. It was packed. For her, you know, I knew that obviously the nerves to be, to play, you know, anytime, you know, Aussies play in Australia or anywhere, you know, you play in your home country, you have a little bit more, but for her, I mean, playing for your country and being, you know, she's such an Aussie, it was everything. And, you know, for us to almost have the match and then almost lose it and then have the match again. I mean, I'll never forget, like, there, I mean, Renee, there's a picture of Renee, okay, where the front page, I feel like the next day, like the Sydney Morning Herald, whatever sports section has a picture of her. I mean, she was diving everywhere. I mean, the poor girl, she is just leaving blood, sweat, literally tears, blood, and literally blood on that court, diving for balls. And there's a picture of her. And this was back in the day when we used to wear like the little tennis undies under our skirts, like that were all like, you know, fun. And there's a picture of her, and her on the ground, laying flat, and her butt in the air and her little tennis undies in the air. It's front page. It's like Stubbs, you know, wins title, you know, but she's like diving for everything. But it was, I mean, it was just, it was so emotional. And it was just so like for her, I mean, I wanted to probably win it more for her than for me and for us, you know, just because I knew, you know, how much it meant to her. And it meant, you know, like I said, her whole family was there, and it was like just that validation. I know I wanted her to have that validation. I wanted us to have it, but I really wanted, you know, Stubbs to have it and like just to do it in her home country. And then she went out and she won the mixed. I mean, the best part is we go and we're celebrating and there's like champagne. She like had a shit glass champagne, goes out and plays like her semis or finals and that.
She's a pro at that.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. But it was just an unreal. And to do it with somebody, I mean, we were best friends and, you know, to have our relationship, friendship and just, it was incredible.
Oh gosh, you'd play together for the next few years, winning 3 Grand Slams and 33 career WTA titles together. You'd go down as one of the greatest teams from the last few decades. You'd play almost all of 2002 together as well before going your separate ways, but you'd end up playing together on and off in your career. You know, you'd come back, especially that 2010 run again when you did come back. What was the dynamic that worked so well with you and Renee as a doubles team? What made you one of the best doubles teams to have ever played?
I just think, you know, Renee, I mean, this is why she's such a phenomenal analyst, is that Renee has such a great tennis mind. And it was like, I was like the brawn of the team in a sense, you know, it was like, I had a bigger shot, you know, the better return, for lack of a better word, bigger returns. I, you know, was quote, better singles player in the sense of ranking, whatever, you know, but what she brought was she brought this dynamic of, she just knew the court so well. And she knew how to poach. She knew when to poach. She knew her opponent's tendencies before they did. And she was fearless, you know? It's like she, you know, you're never going to meet somebody who's going to compete better than Renee or more than Renee. But for what she may have lacked in like a big return, she made up for with her court positioning and how she moved at the net. And she just brought the best out of me, you know? And, you know, whereas like for me, like I was never a natural mover, like crossing at the net. Like if someone said, okay, Lisa, backhand go. Or, you know what, I'm going to hit the return, go. I'm amazing. Boom. But like, it took me a while to learn how to like, okay, to kind of see the court better as far as like the angles and when to go. And someone like Cara Black, you know, and even Liesl. I mean, they all play with Renee. Like the three of them, they were very different than me as far as doubles players, because like they were very much more of natural poachers, movers at the net. Whereas I had to study it and learn it and practice it and perfect it. Whereas like I had like a great volley or whatever, the ground strokes, and I placed my serve well, but like the movement at the net had that didn't come naturally. So it was like, that was something that Renee and I, we just clicked and we just worked well together because our games meshed, because she just was so good at being like, okay, Lisa, this is what we need to do here. And, you know, Lisa, you know, you need to cross on this one, or let's do this. Or how do you feel about this? You know? And I'd be like, okay, do it. Great. I'm the best. You give me a plan. You give me directions. I'm going to follow into a T. That's why I say like, I'm a horrible cook, but I love to bake, because it's like baking is all about a recipe. It's like perfect. Like, you know, everything has to be measured perfectly.
Oh, it makes so much sense. Honestly, you two were my favorite team to watch.
Thank you.
It was like a ballet. Honestly, it was, you could tell that you were best friends and so close, because it was just, you guys had harmony on the court. And when there wasn't, but you know,
absolutely. Yes.
At this point, Lisa, in the early 2000s, you're still juggling a top 30 singles career and being the number one player in the world in doubles. Can we talk about Memphis for a moment? It's a place that has major significance in your career. Let's start in 2002. You'd win your third WTA singles title, getting revenge against Alexander Stevenson.
Yes.
7-6 in the third, saving five match points.
Five. Oh my God. Five. I get nervous even thinking about it. It makes me anxiety thinking about it.
I mean, winning a tournament and winning a final at that, at five match points down, so dramatic. I mean, that's like,
and
every
she was, let me tell you something. She was phenomenal indoors at that time of her career. Yeah. Like, her serve was huge and she had this big forehand. And it was just like, when it was on and those courts were quick, it was like, forget it. I mean, it was.
Yeah, but you wanted revenge. You know, that was it.
Yes. I did.
By the way, I've also spoken to Alexander Stevenson. She also said that match was the her do-over WTA match. So that's two players now that I've spoken to who have referenced you as their do-over match.
That's hilarious. There you go. God. Jeez.
You'd repeat the next year in 2003. You'd win your last singles title against Amanda Kutzer, the legend, who's living a billionaire wife life right now. I mean, Amanda Kutzer.
No doubt.
I love Amanda Kutzer.
Right.
You were 4-10 against her lifetime. So really good job picking the match that you won. So.
Absolutely. Indoors. Thank you for, had a big part to do with it.
We talked about that three match points in 2004. It was a barn burner against Vera Zvonareva. Another drama. Drama followed you to Memphis all the time, Lisa. That was just, that was it.
It did. It did.
But what I want to really talk about is 2007, because it's a little more significant. Your last singles match you'd play in your career, and it was against Bethany Mattek Sands. I'm sure you've talked about this ad nauseum and at length in your career. But what was it about that Memphis tournament that kind of propelled you to stop playing singles for that last time?
It was a few things. I think at that point, my ranking was starting to get to the point where I was starting to have to qualify for events. Now, at the same time, I was starting to do very well in doubles. Sam and I were starting to play Sozer, and I was going to have to make that decision, okay, I'm going to be in the finals of these doubles tournaments, but if I'm winning these doubles tournaments in the finals, I got to get to the next event and play qualies. So that was always in the back of my mind. And it was one of those things too, where it was like, this is no disrespect to anybody or whatever, but it was like, I just had a very high standard of how I wanted to play singles and what my ranking I wanted it to be. I'd never wanted to be the player to rock up to a tournament and take a paycheck. Mm-hmm. Or can't tell you how many players would say to me, well, you'll get in, just play. And I'd be like, no, like, I don't understand that mentality. You don't go out there. And I've said this to Allie, and I've said, look, if you don't feel like you can win a tournament, do not step foot on a tennis court. And that's just how I always was. So I just felt like my singles was starting to kind of go down a bit. And I knew in order for me to get it back to that top 15, top 20, obviously my dream was always to be top 10. I knew that it was going to take a lot and a lot of work that, you know, I was going to have to get fitter. I was going to have to spend some more time on the court for my singles. And then I was thinking, but I'm really starting to do well in doubles. You know, could this be, I still love tennis. Like, I don't want to retire here, but could there be almost like a second career for me here? I mean, Sam was like this young kid coming up, tons of talent, you know, raw talent that was just ridiculous. And I was like, you know what? Like, maybe I just start playing just doubles. And I said to myself, I'll never forget in Memphis, again, I loved it. I loved playing at that club. I just, something about that event just brought out the best in me. So I go there and I remember thinking to myself, if I can't do it here, like if I can't beat these girls and really feel good on this court, which is one of my favorite courts ever played on and in the world, then I know it's time. And I did. I went out there and Bethany was this young kid, you know, I think she had got a wild card that year and coming up and I'll never forget, it was a night match. And I walked off the court and I remember just saying to myself, that's it. I'm done.
Yeah.
And I just knew it. I knew I just didn't have what it took to get back to where I would want to be. And I knew if I couldn't bring out the best in me in Memphis, it wasn't going to happen. And so that was it. And then hence my last basically 8 to 10 years of my tennis career, which was only doubles. It was like a second career.
Ugh.
Yeah. I mean, it was just one of those things where it was just, I had certain standards for myself as a singles player and I didn't want to be mediocre. And again, I don't mean that in any disrespect. I'm not saying that my ranking at that point was, it was just for Lisa, that was the standard I had. And that's the standard I wanted to always play at.
Well, I want to wrap up your singles career today.
Okay.
I can't talk about your singles without one of my favorite matches of yours ever. It was your run to that Australian Open quarterfinal. You'd beat Venus Williams, who was 3 in the world at the time, in the third round. And it would be the only time you'd ever beat Venus in your career.
Yeah.
What do you remember about competing against the legend Venus Williams?
Just, again, to have a win like that in like the latter part of stages of my career was just so phenomenal. And, you know, Australia was a place where I never really felt like I played my best tennis. So for me to be able to step out there on center court, I had a brutal first round that year, you know, Sanchez Lorenzo.
Yeah.
I beat that. And that was a funny match because we were supposed to play out on court like 21 or whatever, right? First round at like fourth or fifth match on. And like 20 minutes before we're supposed to go on, they're like, oh, you're moving to center. And we're like, what? And I'm like, so they moved.
Whoa.
Yeah. So my first round match was actually moved to center court, which later on playing Venus on center would actually, obviously, you know, certainly, you know, help me, you know, being, I've already been out there that year and I played on center obviously before that year, but still different when you go out there playing. I never played singles out there. It was just one of those matches. I had the perfect game plan. Andy Brandy was with me that year. I had my best friend with me as well. And it was just, it was just one of those things where it was like, okay, this is exactly what you're, how you're going to play her. And I did it. I did it to a T and it worked. And I just, it was just such a phenomenal feeling. And I mean, again,
the stars aligned, Lisa.
They aligned, you know, and I had to play, I played Tatiana Golovin in the next round, which for me, it was another great matchup. And I was like, all right, come on, Lisa, you know? And then I ran into my, you know, nemesis in the quarters, but.
And then you saw Patty's name and you're like, oh, Patty, damn it, Patty.
And that was it. And that was it. I mean, why am I even taking in the car? I should have just stayed in the hotel room that day.
Oh man.
Anyway, but yeah, that was to beat her on center court, you know, the legend of Venus that at that point in my career was just awesome.
Well, you beat some legends in singles, Lisa. All right, we're moving on to our last question today. We're going to cover the extraordinary longevity of Lisa Raymond. Joe, this is your last question. Are you ready? If you get this, you have the tiebreak, so you win today. It's all about this question.
Oh, my God. All the pressure, Joe.
Okay.
Here we go.
I got it, I hope.
Lisa would win her last doubles title in 2012, playing with partner Liesl Huber. That year, they would win 5 titles, including this tournament that Lisa would win a remarkable 7 times in her career. Which tour stop did Lisa win 7 times, and it would be both her second tournament victory as well as her second to last tournament victory? It's a tough one. I'm sorry. We've talked about it today. It's come up.
We talked about it. Wasn't.
So I'll give you a hint as well. She's 7-1. And Lisa, do you remember you lost in one final? Do you remember who your partner was in this final that you lost? We talked about her earlier today too.
Oh, yes.
It was Natalie Tosiat. I don't know if that's not going to help you at all.
I didn't know if I was allowed to give hints or I would have helped you, Joe. I'm sorry.
Quebec City, maybe? I have no idea.
That would be great. That would be was so great. It wasn't Quebec City. It was Indian Wells.
Oh, man. That's a huge one.
I'm sorry, Joe. I suck. I loved playing out there. Loved it. I absolutely love the I love playing out West. I love the conditions. I loved in playing Indian Wells. The tournament, it was hands down, like always my favorite event in the States every year. So
also 9 finals in Eastbourne.
Grass.
That's 6 titles in Eastbourne, 9 finals. That's crazy too. You picked your places that you liked. That's what you did.
I did. Listen, that's the, hey, I'm a creature of habit. I'm a creature of habit. Yeah.
Lisa, after Renee, your steady partner would be another Aussie, an Aussie that Renee now coaches. So it's fun, full circle of life with Sam Stosur. You'd win 20 titles with her and add 2 grand slams to your resume. Yeah. Sam, I feel like has the same type of longevity as you did in your career. Her win at this year's US Open was
so awesome.
Amazing to watch. It really was. I was out there. I don't know, Joe, if you got to watch a little bit of it, but I was just in awe.
So happy for them.
When you talk about being out there, loving the sport, you know, really just enjoying it. It's so evident. Renee did the same thing. Liesl did the same thing. You did the same thing. It was this love of the sport playing for such a long time. And congratulations, Sam Stosur. What made you and Sam work so well together? I know we've talked about Renee. We've talked about Lindsay. Was there something different about Sam that made you and Sam click?
Our games matched up so well and we were great friends. I mean, to this day, again, I mean, she was like a little sister to me, you know, and we were so good together on the court, and we got along so well off the court. And it's funny because it's like you either have that in a partnership on the doubles court or you don't. With Renee, very close. Liesl, it was very much more business, you know, but it worked. It worked phenomenally well. But like with Sam, I always say this. I mean, Sam and I, the only reason Sam and I stopped was because she got sick when she had got the Lyme disease. And I mean, that was just so horrible and so scary. But at that point, we were dominating, you know, and we were winning and we were one in the world. So who knows what we would have been capable of, you know, if that wouldn't have happened. Again, it was just one of those things. I mean, she had this massive serve, hit these heavy, heavy ground strokes and would serve and volley.
Yeah.
But it would enable me to cross, enabled me to move. I mean, it's like, I mean, how do you lose your serve when you've got Sam, you know, serving and if you can volley half decent, you're going to hold serve. So, but it was just awesome, you know, and the cool, one of the coolest things ever was, again, you know, we weren't playing together at the time, obviously, but you know, when Sam won her singles title, that was the year that Liesl and I won the doubles. And it was so fun because like, I go out there and I'll never forget, you know, Liesl and I win and we finished and I saw her coach at the time, Dave Taylor and Sam, you know, and I just said, okay, it's your turn now. It's her turn. And I'll never forget, of course, after the final with Liesl, you know, I stayed around. I had all these friends there and we had a couple of drinks, you know, and so I watched some of Sam and I saw Sam after her singles, after she won, we were just bawling, you know, and it was just so cool. So, you know, Sam's just her partner now, you know, Rose, she's just awesome. And I play a little bit of doubles with her and I could not be happier.
You've had so many iconic partners, you know, you really have. You've had these long-term partners that have just, you know, really worked out for you. I wanted to touch on Liesl real quick because it was the last Grand Slam that you had and you won it on September 11th back in 2011.
Yes.
My only question with Liesl was, I know it was different and we talked about that dynamic when you compared to someone like Renee or Sam or Lindsay.
Mm-hmm.
Did it mean a lot to you being able to win that last US Open because you were older?
It meant everything. And it meant not so much because I was older. It was more about the year and change before, I had, my ranking had really dropped. I had gotten very out of shape. Actually more like a year and a half, let's say. And I finally got my, you know what, together. Got in probably the best shape I ever was in my career. And a lot of people doubted the fact if I ever get back. And I did get back. But part of that journey of getting back was I needed to find the right partner. And I'll never forget, you know, I reached out. Liesl was in between partners, I think. And I was looking for a partner and I reached out to her. And she said, let's do it. And I'll never forget, my coach at the time was not very supportive of it. And for different reasons or whatnot.
Because personal.
It's just
okay. All right.
Different reasons.
I mean, okay. Got it. Yeah.
And I just couldn't believe it. And I was like, I was like, what? I'm like, look, how could, you know, I'm in great shape. I'm playing great. The only piece right now that's missing is the partner. He just was not in support of it. And I asked so many different people. I reached out to Billie Jean King. I reached out to Lindsay. I reached out to different people asking advice. And they all said, you know, Lisa, you know what? It's your career. You got to do this. And I did it. And it was best decision I made.
Yeah.
And again, it was one of those things. It was like when we won that, that US Open, it was like, I just couldn't wait to just be like, I told you guys so. I told you so. And it was just like, I proved to myself and to so many people that I would get back and I was going to do it with Liesl. So to be able to do it at 38 years old was pretty awesome.
That's such a great story.
Well, thank you.
We're wrapping up today, guys, with Liesl Raymond, the legend. I just wanted to touch briefly, obviously, wrapping up your career. The last tournament you played was at the US Open. You got to play with Matty Keys. And what a great person to play your last match with. How did you decide that that was going to be it for you, Lisa?
Well, that was, I just felt like that it was coming. It was coming. It was coming. And so when Lindsay had reached out to me about working with Matty, I didn't really have a regular partner at the time. And I was, you know, thinking about retiring and this and that. And I was like, okay, well, why don't we maybe do this? You know, why don't I play a few events with Matty and then I'll finish at the US Open with her. And then I was going to continue. I mean, I was going to be like the next week getting on a plane with her and traveling to Quebec, you know, because Lindsay couldn't go and Johnny couldn't go. So that, I mean, it just kind of just evolved into this, you know, where let's finish here together. And.
But did you know that was it going into that tournament? Did you, you already knew? When did you make that decision? Was it 2015 earlier or you said, okay, this is.
Probably beginning, maybe in the spring when we decided, you know, and like, again, I was working with her and I was like, all right, I talked to Lindsay and I was like, look, how about this? And, you know, Lindsay's like, look, why don't you play with Matty and you guys, you know, you can play the Open. I was like, yeah, and I'll finish there. And it was crazy. I mean, it was just one of those matches where you're out there playing, but you're not almost, you know? And it's like, and surreal. I'll never forget. I was fine. And, you know, we finished the match and, you know, I called Maddie Minor. It's a long story. Minor starts, you know, bawling and I'm okay. I'm not crying. I'm okay. I'm keeping everything together. And I'm like, you know, and she's like, you know, hysterically crying. So we walk off the court and I'm like talking to different people. I'm still fine. I go to inside Arthur Ashe Stadium into, you know, towards the locker room after like talking to all these people and, you know, this and that. And I walk in and I'll never forget. I see Lindsay and I see her and she's standing right outside the locker room. And I literally look at her and I lose it. And that's where I lost it. And I don't know what it was. And I don't know if it was just kind of the full circle where it was like LD and I kind of like, I'd started my career with her and it was like, there she was after my last match. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, I just lost it. And then, you know, and then you go through the whole deal and I'm in the locker room and I'm bawling and I'm talking to this one. And the thing that's even crazier is that I wasn't supposed to play mixed. And so I'm sitting there with friends and afterwards, I think I didn't drink. I didn't have anything to drink. I was going to, but I didn't. I was like two times getting drug tested and this and that. And then I was going to, and I'm sitting there with a bunch of friends and all of a sudden someone from the WTA comes up to me and they're like, oh, Fognini pulled out of the mix. And I was like, what? And they're like, oh, you're in, you and Jamie, me and Jamie Murray. And I'm like, what? Go out and I play and we win. We go out and we win our match. And it was so crazy. Cause here I am like retired. And then like 4 hours later, I'm still in the US Open.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So then I ended up losing. Like, I think we lost the next or the second tonight, but like, which, so that was kind of just a really, really crazy day. So yeah, very cool.
Oh, Lisa. Well, there was so much to be proud of, Lisa, and you've done things in tennis that kids only dream of. Your longevity is remarkable. So I thank you so much. Lisa, you're also the winner of Fan versus Favorite today. So bragging rights to the Tennis Pro this week.
Okay.
So well done. Another title for your trophy case. So pretty awesome. Joe, thanks so much for joining today.
Of course. Yeah. Thanks for having me. This was excellent. I could listen to her talk all day.
Joe, thank you so much. And thank you for all your support and catch the ball. Catch the ball.
Lisa, thank you so much for joining today.
Thank you guys. That was awesome. That was super fun.
I want to thank my guests for joining us today. I had such a fun time. You can find Joe on Instagram at @WWJoeDem. That's WWJoeDem. Thank you, my friend, for joining today. It was so great to talk to you. Our WTA legend can be found on Instagram at Lisa M. Raymond. Lisa, I can't thank you enough for joining today. I learned so much and good luck with your Hall of Fame nomination. While you're on Instagram, shoot me a DM at John Garica and let me know who you're a big fan of. Also, don't forget to follow us at Fantastic Tennis Pod or on Twitter at Fan Tennis Pod. And if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, we'd love and appreciate a fantastic review of the show. It's always so helpful. My name is John Garica, and thank you for listening. This has been Fantastic.